Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for September 23rd. We are back in the windowless multimedia lounge after venturing out for our live episode last week. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hi, Elise.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott of the Tribune and KUT News.
Hello.
Today we're talking about down-ballot races and those on the statewide ticket who aren't getting that much attention. Linda Chavez-Thompson and her appearance at Trib Live this week. Catherine Youngblood Glass, the Libertarian candidate running for governor. And Harris County and their foray back into paper ballots this fall. Ross, let's start with you in the down-ballot races.
It's sort of life outside the center ring. You know, there are all these races. Everybody's paying close attention, as they always do, to the marquee race, which this time is the governor's race. And there are all of these people running for statewide important offices who just can't get, you know, they're so broke they can't pay attention. You know, it's just one of those deals that happens every year. We've got the lieutenant governor's race with Linda Chavez-Thompson and David Dewhurst. We've got the attorney general's race, Greg Abbott, Barbara Ann Radnofsky. Say that three times fast. Jerry Patterson and Hector Uribe running for Land Commission. Todd Staples and Hank Gilbert for Ag. And David Porter and Jeff Weems for Railroad Commission. We didn't do it in our poll this time, but there's always this interesting thing where you can serve in statewide office in Texas for years. Like Gary Morrow was Land Commissioner for 16 years or something, and ask people if they know who Gary Morrow is, and then their name ID is below 20%.
Couldn't pick him out of a police line.
Right. It's not a knock on Morrow. It's a nature of life outside the center.
The fact is, you know, you get down to the level of Railroad Commission, I guarantee you that if you ask most Texans, can you name the statewide elected railroad commissioners, they couldn't do it.
Right, right.
And then, of course, you haven't mentioned things like State Board of Education,
right.
State Supreme Court.
Any number of judges, any number of DAs.
Court of Criminal Appeals, right. You know, it's impossible to get attention if you're not near the top of the ballot. And as you've pointed out this year, if you're not White or Perry, there's no attention left for you.
So this last 6 weeks of the election, before the election, and I guess the last 4.5 weeks or 4 weeks before early voting starts, is when these people really begin to clamor for attention and really begin to knock on doors a lot and figure out that, you know, well, I'm just not going to make it to the front page of the paper or to the front page of a website or to the lead of a TV newscast, and so I've got to find another way. So
when you look at Greg Abbott's bank account and you see that he has more money in the bank, more money on hand than any other person in political life in Texas. The reason is not that he's raised all that money this time. It's that he's never really had to spend any money these years. And this is, again, the case. You know, Barbara Radnofsky, to name one Democratic candidate who's desperate for attention but is not getting any, hasn't raised a whole lot of money. She's doing everything she can, in her case, to get out in front of people. Abbott doesn't have to do anything.
He's got, last check, over $11 million in the bank. There'll be another report out. In fact, the campaign finance reports for the 30-day reports, they're raising money like crazy, and that window closes this week. Next week, we'll get another peek at money. But Abbott had $11 million plus
last
time.
He doesn't have to spend anything, Ben, right? He's the incumbent, and it's not really a race, and so...
You know, but I was wondering, in terms of money, I mean, Bill White has shown that he can fundraise with Governor Perry.
Right.
Is it a chicken and egg thing with everyone else? Is it, well, show me that you're in the race and then I'll give you money? I mean, it looks like White has shown that there's Democratic money to raise.
Right. Most of the money that you raise is money that wants to win races. Right. They're not just, you know, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat.
Not trying to just prove a point.
You know, there are some givers like that. Steve Mostyn comes to mind. James Leiniger comes to mind. Bob Perry comes to mind, who will give to their party even in down times. But most of the money in politics goes to where those money people think the winner will be. And it's not that you ask most people, are you just going to give to the winner? It's you know, they're Republicans and they're Democrats, but they're either active or not, and they're active if they think their candidates are going to win.
But you bring up a good point. It does take attention in order to even make it a close race and then get that money later on.
But, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
I won't give you money unless you demonstrate you can win, but you can't demonstrate you can win unless somebody gives you money.
So if a Democrat this election, next election, actually wins the governor's race, will then all of a sudden you see money flowing to Democratic candidates in the lieutenant governor's race, attorney general, and on for the next election?
It's different when you have an office holder, because you have a beachhead and you have sort of an established base and you have people who are, you know, let's be delicate here and say people who migrate from government jobs to campaign jobs to government jobs to campaign jobs. They can keep their infrastructure alive better when they have office.
And nationally, we've seen that. Nationally, right.
Well,
after Obama
we've seen it in
Obama
Texas.
Went,
it's why the Republicans are strong all the way up and down, because they, you know, they control all the executive
but
agencies
the,
and the legislature.
The point is, somebody has to be the first to break that stranglehold on statewide elective office that the Republicans have right now. And the Democrats, at least south of Bill White, in our poll, while White was about 6 points down, every other Democrat at the statewide level was 15, 12, 14,
well,
17.
There's one thing that's funny about ballots is that as you get to the bottom of the executive statewide ballot, in other words, the non-judicial races, you're right. The generic at the top, the lieutenant governor's race at last check was 15. The AG's race was 17. But when you get down to ag commissioner and railroad commission, the margin is only 8 or 9 points.
And why do you think that is?
Well, it just always happens that way. And when parties break back in, they usually break in at the bottom of the ballot. Rick Perry got elected in 1990 along with Kay Hutchison in what was otherwise a Democratic sweep. They were down ballot Republicans that year and barely won their races.
But don't you think that the introduction of straight ticket voting into the general election, different from the primary where there is no straight, you know, isn't that right?
How do you vote straight?
You couldn't. I mean, right. But the mechanism of straight ticket voting is available as an option for somebody in the fall. You're going to see that David Porter is going to benefit from Rick Perry.
He'll benefit, but he won't benefit to the same extent that David Dewhurst and Greg Abbott do.
Because they're closer?
Because at the bottom of that ballot, those races tend to be closer margins. It's really kind of interesting.
Is it because people who are not straight ticket voters go Perry, Dewhurst, Combs, Patterson, I'm bored with this, and then they just don't bother to fill out
it just happens that Republicans do that more frequently than Democrats.
Republicans
do.
Bore more easily, is that
yeah,
what you're saying,
just,
Ross?
They don't get as far down the ballot as Democrats do, statistically. I mean, it's just
you win 30 years in a row, the attendance starts to lag at the stadium, you know.
What finally can these Democratic candidates at the statewide level do? Anything? Is there any kind of game change for them between now and November?
You have to win attention somehow, and then you have to do something with the attention that you win.
Or you have to hope that your opponent wins attention in a negative way.
Right. And it may be, you know, if you hey, look at me, and if everybody looks at you for a minute, then you have to do something with it. Victor Morales, who ran famously for the U.S. Senate.
Driving that pickup truck,
got everybody's attention and then didn't do anything with it. Do you have a program? Do you have an idea, right? So they've got this limited amount of time to attract attention and give voters some reason to make a decision about them.
Maybe Linda Chavez Thompson can chain herself to Dewhurst's desk or do a sort of flagpole sitting or something. I mean, if it takes a stunt, I thought this morning, based on my conversation with her, she might be just the person to do such a stunt.
Well, to go back to what you said, this is why a lot of the people that are incumbents right now aren't doing debates.
Why would you debate? You don't want
to make a mistake to the benefit of somebody who's not getting attention.
It legitimizes your opponent by putting them on a peer stage with you, and it gives you the opportunity to step in it, which you frankly would rather not do.
Right.
And obviously both sides do it. I don't know when the last time Lloyd Doggett debated.
Mm-hmm.
And Lloyd Doggett should debate, just as they all should debate, I think.
And let's talk about the person immediately south of Bill White on the Democratic ticket, Linda Chavez Thompson.
Yeah, we had her this morning over across the street at our Trib Live conversation. The video will go up, I believe, on Friday of the full conversation. We'll have some video up by the time you hear this Tribcast on the site already. And I'll tell you, I don't know that I went into it not thinking much about what she would say or how she would say it, but I found her to be extremely articulate, passionate about the issues that she's running on, unafraid of being a Democrat in a bad Democratic year, to the point of even saying that she leaps into the embrace of the president. She's not one of these Democrats who feels the need to run the opposite direction when Obama's coming. She runs toward him. She knows who she is and knows who she's not. And while it's very difficult for anybody in a situation like that to be competitive in this year, in this state, I found her to be, generally speaking, an impressive candidate, articulate, much more knowledgeable. You know, I thought to myself going in, I remember during the 06 governor's race, there was that whole flap over whether Carol Strayhorn knew who the president of Mexico was.
Right.
And then I interviewed her on Texas Monthly Talks on PBS, and I said, I want to give you a chance to redeem yourself. Do you know who the governor of Arizona is? Or the governor of Louisiana. I asked her, do you know who the governor of Louisiana is?
Right.
And she didn't. She couldn't name. And I had Mark Sanders' evil stare at me.
He's
for about
still
20
staring
minutes.
At you from
still
somewhere.
Mad about
like a
that. Right.
Cat. His eyes are still out.
Well,
there.
I thought to myself going into this, I don't know how much Linda Chavez Thompson actually knows about being lieutenant governor, because it is not like governor, where it's largely a job where you make pronouncements on issues, but there aren't levers you have to pull. There's not a lot of procedural stuff. But if you're lieutenant governor, there's quite a lot of procedural stuff, beginning with the now famous or infamous two-thirds rule. So I was going to ask her at some point, you know, let's talk about how much you know about this office. Talk about the two-thirds rule. But it was clear to me within 5 minutes that she had a complete grasp on what it meant to be a lieutenant governor and the job that she could do. Now, you take issue with the stuff that she says or stuff she believes, but it illustrates the problem that Ross was alluding to earlier. You know, here is somebody who presents well enough as a candidate. She got no traction.
Right.
She's going to get, I mean, frankly, my apologies, ma'am, she's going to get no traction between now and November.
Right.
There's just not any way for that race to be won by
Democrats. Unless Dewhurst, as we go back, you know, makes a mistake, which unlikely.
But he'll be in the man cave for the next 6 weeks. He's not going to see daylight for the
There's
next
no
six
reason
weeks
to come
because
out.
Why would he come out and why would he debate her?
So my big question, though, is if she does present well and she is kind of a, you know, a candidate who obviously is Hispanic and can do well in areas like South Texas, why she and Bill White aren't seen together more often, why Bill White hasn't lashed himself to her.
It's a great question. I asked her about that, and she kind of didn't answer it. She sort of said, well, no, White and I are often in the same place speaking at the same time. But you know, we've talked before, Ross and Ben, maybe we've talked as well, that if you're Bill White and the only route to success is to turn out every single Democrat, including a big Hispanic turnout,
right,
you want to have Linda Chavez Thompson attached to you for the entire 6 weeks between now and November, because you want the Hispanic community to look at her and think, this is my ticket. This is my party. She talks about and talked this morning about being out in South Texas in places where people don't traditionally vote, thinking that she's going to turn out votes from the colonias. And good luck.
Well, the Democrats ran
it's
their,
a tough deal.
The Democrats ran their big dream ticket, you know, back in the day, and have decided for you know, that bombed. The Tony Sanchez, Ron Kirk, John Sharp, Kirk Watson thing, that bombed. And so they've decided, you know, the strategy now is let's all hang separately. How about that?
So the question is she going to be able to turn people out for White?
Right.
Is what I want to know.
Right. I think maybe, you know, they separate her because of the idea that she jumps into Obama's arms. You know, Bill White has run from Obama. If he were to have multiple events with, you know, holding both their arms up in the air and everything, you know, that would just give more fuel for that. At the same time, she runs separately. And if she does pull some people out, obviously they're going to come out and vote for her and Bill White.
The theory is there are not Perry Chavez Thompson voters.
Well, and she's, you know, she's a union official. I mean, you know, one of the things that's interesting about her, and I think one of the reasons why she doesn't seem like a first-time candidate, is because she was a pretty high official in the AFL-CIO, first national vice president who was female or Hispanic, much less female and Hispanic. And so she's got some political chops, but, you know, this is not really a union state. And I think the, you know, part of Bill White's thing has nothing to do with the Hispanic deal, has everything to do with the union deal.
And yet, whether it's the Hispanic community or labor, he needs the base vote to turn out to have a chance.
Right.
And that's why she potentially is an asset for him.
Well, maybe you'll see then in the closer in financial reports a Democratic donor giving some money to her.
Your friend Steve Mostyn.
Elise. My friend. Oh, dear.
Maybe Mostyn will, you know.
As long as you don't call him my boo. Yeah.
No. Matt Mikowiak is your one and only boo, Elise.
Switching gears here. Well, I wanted to talk about Catherine Youngblood Glass, the Libertarian candidate for governor. She, in our Texas Tribune poll, captured, 5%?
A little bit more than 5%.
Which was fairly impressive. And now she's actually going to really campaign. She says on the stump that it only takes 34% to win this race if this three-way race actually does pan out. And so, you know, she's actually very hopeful. She wants to cut the state budget in half as one of her main platform items.
Good luck.
Which half?
Yeah, right. You mean the half that serves children in schools or the half that takes care of sick people in hospital?
Right.
What?
Right.
Which half?
So the question, though, is to what extent Kathy Glass can help Bill White? Because obviously Bill White isn't going to use Linda Chavez Thompson as somebody.
Listen, libertarians have helped elect challengers. It's a long, proud history of that. You know, the fact is that any libertarian vote is a vote that Bill White's not getting, an anti-vote that Bill White's not getting, but libertarians are probably more likely to take Republican votes than Democratic votes this year.
Right.
What do you say?
That's kind of the calculus.
I would, you know, and we've seen several races in the last few years where, especially at county level or a state house race level where you've had a Libertarian come in and help out. But I wonder if maybe this year it's not going to, even though she's polling at 5% right now, I wonder if it's not going to have the same effect this year, because there are a lot of people within the Tea Party movement that have been waffling Libertarian Republicans for a while. And if they're going to find a place to land this year and they decide to land on the Tea Party side, that's probably a vote for Perry and not either a protest stay home vote or a protest Libertarian vote.
Just because Perry, unlike all the other establishment Republicans, is kind of nailed
Perry,
down the Tea Party.
Yeah, Perry started dating the Tea Party, you know, way back a year and a half ago, and, right. and they've got a good relationship.
There are a lot of people in the state who would probably tell you, without much prompting, that I am for neither party mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we found in our poll an unusually high percentage of undecideds, which can reflect something of that.
It was 31% in the last governor's election.
Right. I mean, right. The reality is there are a lot of people who look at the Republicans and the Democrats and they say, neither party is doing something for me and mine. Right. And so I choose to go another route. The question is not so much whether those people can be persuaded not to support the Republicans and Democrats, it's whether they could be persuaded to support the Libertarians. Does the Libertarian candidate and the Libertarian platform seem legitimate enough from a governing standpoint? Let's assume that the Libertarian won. Would that Libertarian governing philosophy be good for Texas and good for you, the voter? Is she the right flag carrier? Or is this actually the preseason setting up for a legitimate third party to emerge as an alternative to the Republicans and Democrats? Not the Libertarians, not the Greens, but something else. The discussion, you know, in 2012, Elise, mm-hmm. is that if Sarah Palin is potentially – Ross and I heard a bit of this discussed last night by George Bush's former strategist Matthew Dow, that if Sarah Palin were the nominee of the Republican Party next time, you'd have Sarah Palin and Barack Obama. You would almost certainly invite like a Michael Bloomberg to run for president as a third-party candidate
right.
and could conceivably capture a lot of these disaffected voters.
Right. Well, you know, part of the question with the Tea Party vote is still, at least for me, whether it's a negative vote or an affirmative vote. Are they voting for somebody or are they voting against somebody? And I think most of the cases we've seen, they've been voting against someone. Voting against the Democrats, voting against the Republicans, voting against the incumbents, whatever the particular situation was, more than voting for someone. So I don't know that anybody has showed up, possibly with the exception of Perry, as an affirmative candidate for the Tea Party in Texas. Now, there's different versions of this story in other states, but I'm just, you know, and so when you go to the polls, if you're a Tea Party or you're, and you know, a disaffected voter who's still a voter, you haven't been so disaffected that you stay home on the couch, but you actually go to the polls. Do you vote for Kathy Glass as a Republican, or do you vote for Rick Perry? And I'm kind of with Ben on this. I think that he's done a pretty good job of capturing, you know, what we've called the middle finger vote before. And just, you know, he just seems to
so
be the repository.
So then who is her constituents?
A lot of the folks who say they were the original Tea Partiers. So I remember covering a lot of these Deborah Medina rallies, and Ben, you probably do too, where there's a schism between Tea Parties. And there's folks who say, we are the original Tea Party people. We are the ones who've been supporting Ron Paul.
So I wondered about that. Is it the Ron Paul revolutionaries?
Right. That's who it is? You know, yeah. Neck tattoo folks that... that did not want to support, who really vehemently don't want to support Rick Perry and actually believe in these very libertarian principles.
Right, but so, like Deborah Medina, if you ask them, well, then will you support Bill White, they say, oh, hell no.
Right, they definitely won't support Bill White, and so that's where Kathy Glass could find a hope.
You know, it's just still interesting to me how the Tea Party has almost, in some instances, mainstreamed the GOP libertarians into the party here in Texas. I mean, we've had, we've had Munisteri defeating
Kathy Adams.
Kathy Adams in the Republican chairs, you know, first time ever that a mm-hmm. Republican chair has been ousted on the convention floor.
Right.
You can say a little bit of Tea Party, a little bit of something, anti-incumbent, whatever. And then you've had, you know, my favorite Austin Republican slash libertarian Ron Paul or Don Zimmerman, who 4 years ago when he ran for state house, was defeated in the Republican primary because he wasn't Republican enough. Then he got elected to the Republican Executive Committee this last time around.
Right.
Right. Right.
All right, let's leave it at that and jump over to you, Ben, in Harris County. What's happening there?
Well, so first of all, Sheriff's Office came out, or Fire Department came out earlier this week and said this is an extremely large building. It's going to take a while. We're still investigating.
So we don't know whether it's arson, but we don't have reason to believe
it. Well, let's back up a step. We're talking about the building where the voting machines burned down.
Yeah. Sorry, that would have been a good one, wouldn't it?
Would have been, yeah. A little backstory, Ben.
Ben doesn't have his notes today.
Talking about the Astros baseball season. It's been completely burned to the ground. No, yeah, so Harris County, they have a gigantic building that had over 10,000 pieces of election equipment. All their election equipment burned to the ground last week of August, including about 10,000 e-slates. Those are the electronic voting devices that we use here in Austin. They salvaged about 40 of them. So they've got an emergency plan in place, buying about 2,500 new pieces of equipment, getting loaners from other parts of the state to be able to try to put on their election. Fire department says we have not found accelerant yet, but we're still investigating. So that's where that stands.
So no, they didn't find any gasoline or...
Didn't find gasoline, didn't find, you know, a little bomb, right. Didn't, you know, nothing.
And
like
this is, or one of those Molotov martinis that they found at the governor's
mansion. So they still have an election problem in Houston. They just don't yet have a conspiracy problem.
Although they don't need to have one because out in the world, there are plenty of people who are willing to promote the conspiracy that this is the most populous county in Texas. It also happens to be Bill White's home county. Ergo, this was a deliberate act
to suppress
the Democratic vote.
And that was absolutely a big deal with the Democrats at first. Very concerned about whether or not, you know, this would reduce the number of precincts, which in turn people say that will reduce turnout because you go to your regular voting place, all of a sudden it's a shuttered building. You don't know where to vote. You just go home. The plan, though, is for them to actually have about four or five more precincts than they had in 2006, the last governor's race. And based on the loaners that they've got and what they have purchased through some emergency funds, they will have only about 300 fewer e-slate machines than they did for the 2006 governor's race. So there will be some fewer, but for that reason, they are going to purchase about 800,000 paper ballots. Now, what I thought was kind of interesting, that, you know, they've spent this money. They've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars purchasing these 800,000 paper ballots. Talking to the clerk's office down there, they're very interested in them being used. And there's been this debate since different places in Texas have gone with e-slates or whatever electronic voting device, and not just in Texas, nationwide. There have been people that have been very concerned that these electronic systems can be hacked, they can be altered, they can be fixed so that, you know, votes count however way the powers that be want them to be counted. So now you have Harris County, largest county in Texas, that will offer the choice, paper or plastic. And it'll be interesting to see how many of conspiracy theorists or just people that would rather use a pencil instead of use an electronic device actually go for those ballots. There'll be optical scan, so we hopefully won't have to be here too awful long.
No hanging chads.
They did not, despite rumors, purchase the election equipment from Florida to make up the difference.
I think a butterfly ballot would be great.
Let's stay up all night.
Yeah. But they, you know, but so, and they're
doing
different things.
Pat Buchanan governor.
It just might be interesting to see, you know, given the choice. I mean, so 50% of the people that vote usually now vote on early voting. That's all going to be electronic. But it'd be interesting to see on election day how many people, when given the choice, decide to go old school instead of new school.
I think the big question is, honestly, is this going to have a material impact on the outcome of the election? And we just don't know. I mean, you can't go back in time, unburn the machines, and then see what it would have been had the machines not burned.
So sort of the question here is whether the lack of machines causes some kind of bottleneck that causes people who have gone to vote and gotten in line to say, forget about it.
And by the way, it's not just the governor's race. It's every race, right?
Right.
So
every
Christy
race.
Tebald and Jim Murphy,
it's
close races elsewhere on the ballot that are theoretically impacted below the level of governor.
Right.
Well, and I think that you might actually see, you know, the conspiracy theory stuff has kind of died down, at least statewide talk, over the last couple of weeks.
There are still a couple people in Austin who shall remain nameless are still talking about
this. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if that maybe kicks up the last week. So is there a conspiracy? Who knows? But if you are a Democrat and you push the conspiracy theory, that's probably just going to galvanize people to say, no, I'm going to wait in this line because I know that they don't want me to be in this line. They want me to give up and go home.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see folks in Harris County, political folk in Harris County, stir this up a little bit before Election Day to drive turnout. They're trying to get you not to vote. They're trying to burn down your machine.
And potentially to do it after the vote. If it doesn't turn out the way they want, you might see a challenge of some kind. I'm not sure that it'll be legal.
Another Florida import, is it?
Oh, great. That's all we need.
All right. That's all right. It for this conspiracy theory edition of the Texas Tribune.
I missed the live audience, Elise. Can we have a live audience back next week? Maybe we
could bring a laugh track next time.
Get Dave McNeely in to just sit in the corner and bat his eyelashes at us.
If you have any questions or comments for the Tribcast, you can always email us at podcasts@texastribune.org. We will be back next week. But for now, on behalf of Evan, Ross, and Ben, I'm Elise. Thanks for listening.